Okay, we're back, I think, for episode 309. Joe, how are you doing?
I'm just fine, Tim, and I was spurred to do historical research, spurred on by the question that you posed for one of the topics we'll talk about later on, that of what are we going to do about this kind of systematic grooming of children that's going on. I mean, what are the solutions, the paths that we have to do to stop this? Oddly enough, I had had come across some very interesting facts that I was unaware of that I think our listeners will find interesting, and they, in an odd way, kind of show the direction forward, or at least a possible answer to your question. And I just wanted to go back to to the Civil War of all things, and to the foundation of B'nai B'rith. And the individuals who set it up, were basically being funded through the individual who was Belmont, who was the Rothschild kind of financial agents in the United States. So that's where the funding for the organization occurs. The individuals involved, one of them was someone who then becomes the head of the Confederates' Secret Service. And his name was Judah Benjamin, Jewish guy. And he worked with, of all people, Albert Pike. And they were interested in fomenting, this was actually before the start of the war, but they were both interested in bringing the war about.
Is this the same gentleman who was the treasurer for the Confederacy? Judah B.
Yeah,
Benjamin?
that would actually be a different person, but
Oh, so, okay. Just Judah P. Benjamin was also there was a Judah P. Benjamin who was the I think the treasurer for the Confederacy.
He might have been. I don't know what, but I the only thing that I'm aware of him being was the he was the person who was in charge in 1861 of the Confederate Secret Service operations. So I don't know. I'll have to check that out. I'll find out. But anyway, so you have what I refer to as the Judaic-Masonic connection right off the bat, with Pike and Benjamin working with B'nai B'rith to spread throughout the United States this desire, or parts of the United States, the desire for secession. Secession was de definitely something that was being promoted by B'nai B'rith. And this was very logical because B'nai B'rith actually comes out of what's called Young America, which was one of the organizations that were following in the kind of the flow of young Germany, young Italy, young Turkey. These were all basically Masonic organizations that had been established to develop unrest in Christian countries. That's how I would characterize their mission. And they're very successful at it. And so we got this Young America, which then the individuals involved with it ended up helping to establish B'nai B'rith, which then has individuals who have this interesting relationship to the assassination of Lincoln. And believe me, Tim, I could take this analysis for a long time in many different directions, but then we wouldn't be able to get onto the topics of our current moment. But I just wanted to give these amazing facts that, incidentally, I received them from Anton Chaikin, who I think is, I would regard as the premier sort of researcher of, Masonic malevolence. Certainly, he and Steinberg and Tarpley are just in a class by themselves. He wrote an article that was published in EIR in April 15th, 1996, and I highly recommend people read it. It's about B'nai B'rith and the relationship to the Confederacy, And this is where these facts that I'm giving you come from. But the amazing facts are is that John Wilkes Booth, this will, if you're not aware of this, this will crack you up. John Wilkes Booth actually got into acting vis-a-vis a Hebrew acting school. And it was run by these two individuals, Benjamin Pexotto and Simon Wolfe. They ran a Hebrew acting school, it was called. And this was where John Wilkes Booth was evidently trained. Now,
wasn't Simon Wolfe also a spy for the Confederacy?
Believe me, yeah, in fact, he was. But anyway, so Wilkes had deposited money that was basically he was having financial back and forth with the Confederate Secret Service B'nai B'rithgite Judah Benjamin. Okay, so this is not contested. These are all bank records, and Benjamin was basically funding Booth somehow. Now, on the following,
yeah, I think Benjamin wore two hats. He was head of Confederate intelligence.
I think you're right. Yeah, no, I'm
and treasure and treasure. Yeah, right. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you can see why the money was flowing from him. Anyway,
so the same person. Yeah,
same person. Anyway, and so they found a coding device, because there was cryptic messages that Booth was sending to individuals. And they found this coding device in Booth's trunk. And they also found the matching coding device to it was found by and turned over to the authorities by someone working in the office of Judah Benjamin. Right. So there was this odd coding back and forth. Now,
this is what implicates him in the assassination of Lincoln, I think, right?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Right. This is all
Judah B. Benjamin, yeah.
Yeah, so this is leading up to the assassination of Lincoln. And so when John Wilkes Booth then...
Yeah, spoiler alert, Lincoln's assassinated. So.
Right, when John Wilkes Booth goes forward and to shoot Lincoln, only hours before he actually met with someone, and this was, of all people, Simon Wolfe. And this, again, not contested. Everyone knows it. In fact, Wolfe said that, Booth said that he was kind of upset about some relationship with a woman, and that may have been the reason why he killed Lincoln. Simon Wolfe was never, you know, questioned any further beyond that. And now at this time, the other individual who was running the acting school, Benjamin Pexiotto, had become the head of B'nai B'rith.
Mm-hmm.
So you can see it's like this very interesting trajectory. Now, here's where it just kind of runs off the rails, because you would think that there would have been some hue and cry about this. However, Simon Wolfe, the same Simon Wolfe who was meeting with Booth for drinks, then becomes the founder of what we know as the ADL. Right. So this is how the ADL gets set up. Now,
several decades later?
Yeah, it's not clear. Again, this is not clear, but it was later. But in any case, it was certainly within a few years of these events. And the ADL was set up, in my opinion, probably to make sure that anyone who looked particularly far into this trajectory, because these are facts, the things that I've just related to you, these are completely vetted facts, and obviously there's a trajectory here that is, you know, is suspicious and malevolent, but it these are facts that are not known to the public. Now, I just want to point out that
Simon, how long does Simon Wolfe live?
God only knows, my friend, but he goes on. Yeah. And he's one of the founders of the ADL. Now here's
that's like 1913, isn't it?
Well, it could, yeah. But remember, the trajectory of the ADL is actually that they had a moment where they actually make it ossified. But I think it was.
Well, no, the guy lived 1836, 1923. So it's
Oh,
definitely
there it is.
possible. Gee, he almost lived a century. So there you
Yeah,
go.
so there you go. Anyway, so
Wow.
now,
Okay. So I just wanted to make sure. Yeah.
yeah,
Wow.
so
That
anyway,
was.
I think these facts are all straightforward.
So he was a
Anyway,
young. He was a young man during the
yeah.
during this in his 30s, which is
But
relatively
anyway,
young for.
so now you have to wonder, well,
Late 20s, 30s.
where is the hue and cry about all this? Why is there not more vetting of this whole all of these connections and things? Well, one of the people in all of this is Isaac Weiss, who had been working with he was a B'nai B'rith leader, and he had been working with Albert Pike and Judah Benjamin. Now, this individual, he then has a daughter who marries Adolph Oakes, who then buys the New York Times, and that the daughter of that individual, of this that couple, then married Arthur Schulberger. So my
Wow.
point is that you have an intersection of individuals. They're all coming from different directions, but you end up with control of the media, right? This group, B'nai B'rith, connecting into Judah Benjamin, ends up owning the New York Times. And on the other side, you have an act, the assassination of Lincoln. Individuals who are absolutely linked into this little cluster of people are then not vetted by anyone at the time or our history going forward. And then to cover it all up, you have the same individuals eventually getting the ADL going, which then puts like a cover over the whole thing, in my opinion. So you don't even learn about these basic facts concerning this very important incident in our history. It just disappears. So anyway, that's now, sorry to be long-winded about that, but I think that these are facts that Americans should, be aware of. And the fact we're not is really the problem, Tim, is that, when you look at how the ADL and the B'nai B'rith are swirling around one another, you can see that on one hand, you have activity which is destructive to the nation, and on the other hand, you have control over the media to permit to keep the information from flowing into the public. And in the center of it all, you have these strange Judeo-Masonic connections, right? Which gives this vast reach over so much of the media, the political class, the military. So anyway, when we look today at our problem that we have with the government, promoting destructive pedagogies to the children relating to their sexuality, and you ask the question of what are we going to do about it? Well, we have to, I think, sort of get a greater understanding in the public of what actually our world consists of. You see my point? If people do not understand that there are lifetime actors and actual actors like Booth, then they will just take things at face value. They will listen to the arguments of Rachel Levine concerning some science study that indicates, that these hormones and surgeries are actually benign, and that may make no sense to them, but they won't flip the bit to understand it as malevolence unless they have the understanding that inside the world of our media, the world of our political class, you have this malevolent organization that uses actors, people who will just basically are lying to us, but this they are giving these lies to us as reality. And we have to stop just buying into this basic trust and start analyzing everything from a position of mistrust and of skepticism. Rachel Levine made a made a statement the other day. I don't know if you caught it, where, you know, a reporter asked her, you know, well, isn't it hard on children, you know, to give them these drugs? And Levine answered, well, imagine if you're a young person and you're going through puberty and it's the wrong puberty, right? The wrong puberty. This was the expression. Now, Tim, this is biologically impossible. The puberty the body goes through is not the wrong puberty. It's the puberty that the body is designed for.
Yeah, you really have to imagine it because it's not possible.
Right, exactly. So for him to be able to put out this expression and not have, you know, just normal people think of he's not an idiot. There's something malevolent that is afoot here. This is what I would say is what has to happen for a defense.
Well, imagine a child being groomed by a sexual pervert, convincing the child that he's in the wrong body. Imagine that.
Yeah, imagine that. Yeah.
That's probably more realistic, I think, happening.
So. Right. Well, there it is. But in any case, this is what we need to look at. You had brought that that question to me, but you had a basically it was referring to an incident. What was that, Tim?
Well, several incidences, but as far as you know, your point here is something with the, you know, with the Lincoln assassination, as generally thought as being a large part of a larger conspiracy. I think we're given the story that Booth sought to revive the Confederacy. I think this after Lee surrendered Appomattox, but the war isn't really over yet. But it's more or less over, at least in the eastern part of the country, which means it's effectively over. It's still going on in deeper south and out west. I think the final battles. Ironically enough, I think the South won the last battle of the Civil War. So you can win battle, but not win the war. So whatever. But the we have the various conspirators. There was a larger conspiracy because I think there was an attempt to decapitate the government. Someone was assigned to kill Seward, Secretary of State. Yeah. Someone was also sent to go after the Vice President, Andrew Johnson. I think he was too drunk or something. Of course, Lincoln's assassinated. He shot at Ford's Theater, seeing a play. Good Friday evening. Shouldn't go out on Good Friday. April 14th, 1865, I think. Yeah. And he dies early the next morning. And, you know, we don't understand the motive here. The motive, you know, you can easily infer a motive. You have the Civil War, and, you know, Booth is an advocate of the Confederacy. And, of course, the previous 4 years have been pretty brutal. So the motivations are pretty easy to understand, I suppose, at least on the part of the triggerman. That doesn't necessarily give us the whole insight in the entire conspiracy as what you told us suggests. I mean, a much wider conspiracy. Even the war itself, the fact that the war broke out and the two sides, you know, clashed for 4 years and killing, you know, I don't know, $600,000 to $800,000 people, perhaps a million more casualties, devastated the South and changed the country forever. The motivations for the war. So, you know, one thing is that Lincoln, why was Lincoln assassinated? Well, Booth may have assassinated either to impress his, because of I guess you could say, unrequited love, or to impress a girl, you know, like Jodie Foster, you know, or because he was bitter over the South or wanted to revive the Confederacy to keep the war going, but of course that might have been their immediate motivations, but they're being manipulated by a wider conspiracy. Just as the two sides were being manipulated by a wider conspiracy. Lincoln himself had, of course, decided to invade the South, which sparked the war. That's what sparked the secession crisis in the border states, which actually gave us a Civil War. There were a series of secession crises. The first one, the Gulf State Confederacy, Deep South. Then Lincoln calls up 75,000 troops to invade the South. That's when Tennessee, Virginia, North Carolina secede, which without them, you wouldn't have had a war. And that's when General Lee resigns his commission and takes command of the Army of the Northern Potomac. And then that's the war. That's how most people understand it, right? But Lincoln, interestingly enough, when the war broke out, I think the U.S. government was offered a loan from the Rothschild banks to finance the war, and Lincoln turned down that offer and issued the greenbacks and financed it through issuing currency, avoiding going into heavy debt. And some people think that was might have been the motivations for Lincoln's assassination in 1865. He didn't go along with
that
the plan.
That would make sense because yeah. Belmont was in back of the trajectory that leads up to Booth.
Yes.
Exactly how the pieces fit together and the rationale. Anyway,
Booth is not aware of all this stuff, but Booth is the same way that, you know, although I don't think Lee Harvey Oswald pulled the trigger that killed Kennedy a century later. But he was involved some way involved in this, in this, you know,
it's
in
so
the events.
Fascinating. I mean, how they manipulate these individuals into place. I mean,
yeah, Booth was a patsy, although he was the assassin, he's still a patsy,
right?
And same and way that Lee Oswald was.
Oswald was, but I mean, the idea that Booth would be at a Hebrew acting school run by these two individuals who are both directly associated with the assassination is, I mean, it's not possible, in my opinion, for that to be accidental.
And also the Jewish angle, because you have Oswald, who's in contact with Clay Shaw. Clay Shaw works for the Trademark, which is owned by Rosenbaum, that Jewish banker and Zionist who ran the Permadex Corporation, which funded all these assassinations. So you have this, oddly enough, up in Canada, in Montreal, the same thing with the Knights of the Round Circle, right? Weren't they up in Montreal?
Exactly.
You have all these parallels. It's interesting. So.
I just want to throw in one little bomb, but I saw this. Another thing is just amazing. I don't know if you ever follow Jim Fetzer, I think his name is.
Yeah.
Anyway, he has a lot of interesting, you know, videos on the Kennedy assassination. And they've come up with this one camera angle of the Oswald's assassination that I have never seen. And they, I guess, had not seen it either. And in it, you can see as Ruby is surrounded by these large men in dark suits, so you can no longer see them, one of them comes into the midst with a bag. He has a bag.
Mm-hmm.
And he puts the bag over Ruby's head. Now, I mean, what is going on here? Why would you bag Ruby after he's fired the gun? And why would this individual even be standing there with the bag? You know, I mean, this is all happening lickety-split.
Mm-hmm.
And they clearly are hiding it from that. They surround him and this individual comes up and bags him. So that was, I just thought, an extraordinary piece of video.
Wilkes is also cornered and murdered like a week later, right, in a farm in Southern Virginia. And of course, he had the whole trial of the conspirators. It's a military tribunal, which doesn't seem to make any legal sense because there are civil courts. And it's a unconstitutional hold a military tribunal for civilians, by the way. So that was one thing. And, so it appears that they sort of kind of rammed through the conviction with very little oversight, and the conspirators over there at the Surratt boarding house. Mary Surratt was the first woman, I think, executed by the federal government.
Yeah.
That was the.
I would think that this cannot stand any scrutiny. I mean, just
it's very strange. On, yeah.
Just based on these facts and these connections and the Rothschild, I mean, Belmont being involved in this, this just stinks. There's just nothing else you can say about it. And then you have, you know, Oakes, Schulzenberger, and the New York Times in the same circle, and you wonder, well, why aren't we learning about these things? Well, because we don't have any control over our media.
Yeah, Well, that's another thing is, because the ADL's used to be ADL of B'nai B'rith, and it's called the ADL now, but it was created to cover up, you know, Jewish misdeeds and criminality, calling anti-Semitism. And so that's its function today, to prevent any scrutiny of Jewish, misdeeds or exercise their power to question what they're doing. You know, they're scheming. And so, yeah, but it's interesting that the guy Simon Wolf, he lived till 1923. So he lived 10 years after the ADL was founded. So, but yeah, right. The media, you mentioned the media. That's a key note, if you will, is that recently, before we get into the other topic, we have that, I sent you a thing about the, there was an, I think, interview with journalist Glenn Greenwald with the Wikipedia founder, Larry Sanger. Told him the CIA and FBI have been using Wikipedia for information warfare. Greenwald ripped Wikipedia for its entry, Biden-Ukraine conspiracy theory. So basically looking at, you look at it, it's supposed to be like sort of an online fact-based encyclopedia. And of course, the entries are being manipulated to serve certain narratives. This isn't anything really surprising. He highlights the Biden-Ukraine conspiracy theory. He says that there's an amount of evidence showing that Hunter Biden was paid $80,000 a month by Burisma executives. Burisma executives were getting a lot in the value in the way of access to Joe Biden, the most important U.S. official on Ukraine. Yet, according to the Wikipedia article, the evidence doesn't exist. It's just a complete conspiracy theory. Remember, this is supposed to be an ideology-free, neutral encyclopedia, Greenwald scoffed. The very first sentence reads, "The Biden-Ukraine conspiracy theory is a series of false allegations that Joe Biden, while he was vice president of the United States, engaged in corrupt activities relating to his son, Hunter Biden, who was on the board of the Ukrainian gas company Burisma," Greenwald lambasted. As part of efforts by Donald Trump and his campaign in the Trump-Ukraine scandal, which led to Trump's first impeachment, these falsehoods were spread in an attempt to damage Joe Biden's reputation and chances during the 2020 presidential campaign. The Wikipedia entry still reads, so notice the Biden-Ukraine scandal is, according to Wikipedia, the Biden-Ukraine conspiracy theory, but the Trump controversy involving Ukraine is the Trump-Ukraine scandal. Everything is written to comport with the liberal worldview and the Democratic Party's talking points, Greenwald scoffed. If you gave the keys to the Wikipedia to the DNC, this is exactly how they would write it, Greenwald observed. The Wikipedia entry then goes on to blame the Ukraine allegations against Joe Biden on proxies of Russian intelligence, including some close to the former vice president and administration. Can it be more blatant than that, Greenwald skewers? This is the site that is being heavily promoted by Google as the authoritative source of what is true and not about the world. And it reads like a monologue from the Rachel Maddow show. Greenwald also blasted the Wikipedia article on COVID-19 lab leak theory, which asserts that the theory is highly controversial. Most scientists believe the virus spilled into the human population. There is no evidence that SARS-CoV-2 existed in any laboratory prior to the pandemic. The idea that the virus was released from the laboratory gained popularity in the United States through a promotion of conservative personalities in early 2020, fomenting tensions between the U.S. and China. Scientists and media outlets widely dismiss it as a conspiracy theory. Let me tell you a fact, Greenwald harangued. The view of the leading scientists in the U.S. Department of Energy, as well as the FBI, is that most likely the explanation for how the COVID pandemic emerged is through research that was being funded by the United States and conducted in the Wuhan lab. You would have no idea that that was true. One of the most important questions of the last decade, where the COVID pandemic came from. Every word on Wikipedia is designed to suggest that only right-wing conspiracy theorists would invest any plausibility in the theory that the virus came from the lab leak and not from the naturally occurring event, even though this top virologist in the world wrote to Dr. Fauci at the time of the pandemic and were adamant the evidence was consistent with the manipulation in a lab. Here, speaking of Greenwald, a Wikipedia founder, Larry Sanger, said that Wikipedia used to be kind of anti-establishment, but between 2005 and 2012 or so, there was a very definite shift to Wikipedia becoming an establishment mouthpiece. It was amazing. I never would have guessed that in 2001 when he first founded the site, Sanger said. By the time Trump became president, it was almost as bad as it is now, Sanger said. No encyclopedia, to my knowledge, has been as biased as Wikipedia is now. It's over the top. The rank and file Wikipedians take their cues from CNN, MSNBC, and New York Times, and had declared 80% of the major news sources on the right to be unreliable. Officially, it's in the policy of a lot of people don't realize, but it's true, Sanger remarked. The left very deliberately seized control, Sanger said, and it's not just the left. We're learning now it's the establishment, and they have their own agenda. Sanger noted that Wikipedia has become an instrument of control for the CIA, FBI, and U.S. intelligence agencies. We do have evidence that as early as 2008, the CIA and FBI computers were used to edit Wikipedia, Sanger said. Do you think that they stopped doing that back then? A programming student named Virgil Griffith first revealed that the activity of the CIA and FBI on Wikipedia in 2007, Sanger said. We know that a great part of intelligence and information warfare is conducted online websites like Wikipedia, Sanger said. The intel agencies pay off the most influential people to push their agenda, which they're really mostly in line with, or they just develop their own talent within the intel community, learn the Wikipedia game, and they push what they want to say with their own people, Sanger told Greenwald. A good, explicitly neutral political encyclopedia like Ballotopia and the right conservapedia, Sanger said, or the gotoresearch.org or encycloreader.org. We're trying to strike a blow against censorship and the control of information by making it easier to find other encyclopedias that are out there with a universal network of encyclopedias called Encyclosphere, Langer said. So I'm not shocked by this.
That's wonderful. What we also have to have is a search engine that's legitimate.
Yeah.
Because in addition to just factual misstatements, you know, like the ones you're presenting, they have this nudge technology, which is far more sinister and destructive, where if you put in, which, you know, and we saw examples of it during the COVID, where if you would put in a search for, you know, something that had to do with vaccine damage, you would get propaganda of how there is no vaccine damage, you know, and then just page after page of it. So this is really the more destructive, I think, is the way the search engines can be manipulated with their algorithms to only provide, you know, the collection of facts that they want you to have. And then beyond that, when you have the social media, Facebook and Twitter, they can control you through, you know, they see what you are like, what interests you have, and then they can move you into political groups and produce feed on your Facebook page that they think will relate to you, but was always moving you in a direction you want. So I would say that, you know, we should have a social media that would be a competitor that would have a freedom base to it. And what we really need is a search engine that will just, you know, produce honest, results of and would have access to the, you know, the broad internet and just give an honest readout. Honest, I mean, the computer readout that is just the one that would come from the request rather than, you know, some filter that has to do with government propaganda.
Well, I understand that's how some of the search engines were set up. I guess they had, like, Google's algorithm was pretty good.
They got us addicted to it.
Yeah.
And then they started to manipulate it. This has always been the plan. Believe me, Google and search engines were the idea back when they were creating the personal computer, you know, in the Silicon Valley in the 1960s. This was just has always been the plan.
Then they purchased YouTube, right?
Yeah.
And then a few years later, they started, you know, censoring YouTube at the best of the ADL, you know, and the FBI. Because they couldn't contend with the amount of information that was on YouTube. You know, same with Google, the search engines and all that. People could... you know, any schlub or idiot you could say anybody could get their page, and you know, if it got popular, the more viewers you got, the more likely that people would watch you, and that's how the algorithm was set. Then they started, you know, shadow banning people and limiting that. Then they just banned you, kicked you off, you know.
Yeah, and they back that up with lifetime actors, with personalities, you know, like they'd get celebrities. But I saw an amusing example of this last week where, you know, a researcher into autism approached the president of the Autism Science Foundation. And he said, you know, I've got some irrefutable evidence that I've assembled that vaccine caused that are partially responsible for autism. And, Alison Singer, this is the individual, she replied, that evidence cannot exist. All the scientific studies show vaccines do not cause autism. So, you know, this is a robotic individual that is using some kind of position of authority to just, you know, not engage. I mean, we've talked about this how many times, that they cannot engage. There's no debate any longer on the sensitive subjects. There's just propaganda and intimidation. So her response was just a classic example. That evidence cannot exist.
Cannot exist.
That's what she said. I mean, can you imagine that? You know, here you have all of this increase in autism. And at the very least, you know, they don't really know exactly all of the things which cause it. They just know it's in dramatic.
So there's no way that vaccines and their adjuvants and their additives and their heavy metals.
That's on the immune system and immune on the system. Biome and all of the strange yeah. things.
But no way that causes neurological damage or causes yeah. brings on the symptoms of autism.
Yeah, so this is like literally this is like a theological position.
Yes.
I mean, it is just, you know.
Well, they say, do you have faith in the science?
No, she has faith, right. So there it is. So it's, but this is what we're up against. And if someone, you know, approached a school board that was a woke school board and said, you know, I just think that this grooming of my kid is wrong on a number of levels, and I want you to stop it. And it's, you know, and I believe it's hurting the child. They would respond like this. They wouldn't respond with the idea of let's have a discussion about it. They would say, we have evidence that you're wrong. Shut up.
Yeah, there's no evidence. Yeah, there's no evidence that it harms children.
Right.
Yeah, there's no science for that.
No science for it. So this is where we are. They can't, you know, they couldn't talk about COVID. They couldn't talk about the vaccine. They can't really talk about, you know, what was Russia provoked? If so, what were the provocations that led to the Ukraine? I mean, nothing can be discussed at this point. We are shutting down discussion as part of our media world and of our and our political world.
Yeah, yeah, and we see that. Like, I just saw something in California. The California Attorney General said Friday he was investigating whether a local school district infringed on students' civil rights by adopting a policy that requires teachers to notify parents if their child identifies as transgender or wants to use a name or pronoun different from what's on their birth certificate. Rob Bonta, or Bonta, said the policy approved by the Chino Valley Unified School District in July could force schools to out their students. Look at that language, out their students, increasing students' risk of being bullied or committing self-harm or suicide. This is a real inversion or twisting here. The Isn't policy also requires parents to be notified within 3 days if their child asks for access to gender-based sports or wants to use a different bathroom or changing rooms that do not match their assigned gender at birth. Students should never fear going to school or simply being who they are, Bonta said in a statement, adding that the forced outing policy threatens safety and well-being of LGBTQ plus students vulnerable to harassment and potential abuse from peers and family members unaccepting of their gender identity. He added, California will not stand for violations of our students' civil rights. So this is really, I am shocked at the moral fervor in which these people carry out their satanic agenda. They really think they have the moral high ground. At least they.
Well, I mean, they have to have that, and they have to have that position.
But listen, when he's twisting, children do not have civil rights, you know, just opposed to their parents. He's facilitating the grooming and traumatizing of kids and calling it civil rights. At the same time, his government is advocating policies, is actively promoting groom students in schools. Policies like you know, one thing is giving them like transgender, the whole bathroom policy or sports programs, or just having gay pride celebrations sponsored by the schools, so kids are being actively groomed by these institutions. And then when it's expected that if a child lets on that he's suffering some sort of, I would say, psychological problem or behavior problem, that they should hide it from the parents, then invoking civil rights to hide this from their parents, to right. steal, more or less the kid, he's invoking civil rights to kidnap kids from their parents.
Exactly right. And notice the key word there, are. Remember, we talked about this, I think, last week, where if they are able to convince a child that the opposite sex to what their chromosomes would suggest for even a moment, then that is the protected and defined self forever. There's mm-hmm. no more questioning. Parents are shut out. All they have to do is just have that one moment where they can get the child to be ambivalent about their sexuality. And we're talking about, you know, kids in like kindergarten, first grade, yes. second grade, yeah. third grade. So So when you think about that, when you think about how easy it would be to just get a young, very young child to consider that it would be, you know, fun to be the opposite sex, and realize that they then define from that moment forward, that's all they have to do. Because, you know, I had mentioned a few shows ago that I know an oncologist. He had seen 1,000 in his career individuals that wanted to, or were considering sex change operations. And he said that only 3 out of the 1,000 ever actually went forward with it after, you know, the psychological reviews and things. But now it's exactly the inverse. In fact, I would say it's even worse than that. I would bet that none of the individuals who have at any point in time, you know, the idea that well, I'm going to explore the idea of changing my sex, that none of them would be prevented from going forward at this point. And in fact, in most cases, I would imagine they would just be put into the process and just spit out the other side automatically. So you can see what they're able to do with just that one instant, that one moment, where they can create the illusion in the mind of the individual that it would be fun to be the opposite sex. And once they do that, then all of these laws will come into play, and the child is just going to be swept right into sex change operations.
Well, the students are not making the students that are often in elementary school or junior high are not making this decision or developing this confusion on their own. They're being encouraged. This a couple of weeks ago, the National Education Association, and which is the largest teachers union in the United States, issued guidance on the use of leftist active symbols in schools and classrooms. And as part of their advice to teachers, they recommended violating state rules, policies, district rules, by hanging things like pride flags, BLM fags, the flat fags. It's on my mind. Flags, other material, grooming material, to start with what they say, start a conversation. This is a way for teachers to, again, get around the rules. They're going to, you know, impose these woke concepts on the students to start a conversation so they can groom the students. So the National Education Association, again, one of the two major teachers unions in our country. The other one is the American Federation of Teachers, which is also devoted to promoting transgenderism. They had a convention last month, and that was one of the primary or top, I think it was on the top of their agenda. It wasn't, you know, test scores, literacy, it's that, math. Yeah.
No, that's not yeah. Interesting.
So it's, yeah. they're this driving force behind this intrusion of, you know, this wacko ideology in the public school setting. And so then you have this clown out in, demonic clown out in California, the Attorney General, both claiming as if the students are just coming this on their own. No, they're being groomed. And then when a kid lets on and a teacher lets on, and maybe that you have a well-intentioned teacher says, well, this isn't good manners, should tell the parent, he wants to bring the force of law against them and to intimidate them. So that doesn't even work. So basically you can separate the child from the parents so they can be groomed easier. You know, so this is what's happening. It's not as if it's just, yeah, this isn't just, you know, I think it was New Jersey. They recently passed a law where they were do away with gender terms in language, male, female, in official policies. Or, I don't know if that means bathrooms or not, and that they're getting a lot of protests about there. So all this confusion is being encouraged by the institutions. And then when the students respond to it in a way where more students are, you know, are confused or feel they are in the wrong body, or experiencing the wrong puberty because they're told such a thing is possible. At the same time, they're being rewarded or getting special attention when they do act this way. You know, they're acting surprised that more students behave this way. Of course, they're going to behave this way because you're introducing the confusion to begin with. These crazy concepts. At the same time, you're doling out benefits, rewards, and special attention for it. And then invoking things like civil rights, as if the children need to be protected
because they can
from their parents.
They define the kid in one dimension, and they use the word "are" or "is." You know, but
yeah.
I would just hope that everyone who listens to us is aware of the contradictory science. There was a really great science paper, it's on PubMed, entitled Apparent Reports of Adolescents and Young Adults Perceived to Show Signs of a Rapid Onset of Gender Dysphoria. And so what they did was just a lot of tests that indicated that what was really creating this rapid onset, right? And that's how they define this, this massive amounts of individuals that are being processed as transgender, was actually just social pressure.
Yeah.
That was what was really behind this current fad, is that it is a fad, and it was just something that was being forced onto the kids. And when you see this and you see the tests that they've done, you can see that, common sense has to be kicked out of the window. If anyone could get Rachel Levine, to answer some real questions, one that would be useful would be to say, Rachel, can you give us some double-blind examples of tests showing that the individuals that you have determined are, transgender, are somehow different than just regular kids, and that this just isn't some kind of fad? In other words, show us your science that you can determine, and of 100 kids that we present to you, the one that is transgender in a double blind, in a real, kind of scientific process. There obviously isn't anything like that in existence. Of course not. They could never show you, well, there's 50 kids here. I can show you the two that are transgender. I have the tests. I have the science. We're going to put it out here and we will find which ones are in this category. They don't have it. So that really what they have is just a fad which is malevolent, and they're just shoving down everyone's throat.
Well, then if you try to pin them down on this, like specific what gender affirming care entails, whether it's the cross sex hormone treatments, which ruin you and poison you, probably set you up for cancer, or the mutilation they call surgery, the reassignment surgery, which is just mutilation. A good example, there was a hearing a couple months ago on Capitol Hill, I think back in June, where the Republicans were having a committee hearing on it, and they wanted to have a testimony of someone, and the Democrats walked out. They didn't want to get in. They were going to testify about the specifics.
Sure. They can't possibly discuss this in public.
They claimed it was irrelevant.
Right. We are becoming rapidly
Well, they're just insane. You want to talk about the height of anti-intellectualism.
Yeah, well, believe me, it's going to get a lot worse because discussions are at the point of counterproduction.
Well, how can you have rational skepticism who thinks that people you could transition for something that you're not, and just pretend that it is? Believe they can actually just because you say that it's so. I mean, you can't
tell you that your child is having the wrong puberty with a straight face.
Yeah, well, Richard Levine, aka Rachel Levine, and Mark Milley won the same football team in high school. And as I took across to the thing, both on the same football team, both are fathers. Rachel Levine's a father, so it proves that. What does that prove?
I guess it proves they didn't have the wrong.
Well, Tucker Carlson said both grew up to be middle-aged women. That's a pretty funny line.
Yeah, that is cute. I mean, particularly Miller.
yes.
Ridiculous, yeah.
But that's how crazy all this is. And of course, it's not just a certain level. It is, social contagion and insanity, but it's evil. And just like the Democrats, when they walked out in that committee hearing, they weren't being crazy. They just don't want to be confronted with the facts, and they know they won't pay any political price for it.
They can do that because we are now a nation that cannot discuss anything, because everything that needs to be discussed is at the point of diminishing returns, where what they would do is just create the clarity that would lead to more people leaving their position and going against them. You see that no discussion, it's like, just like the vaccine or we are at the point where the agendas are so irrational.
Well, it's a question of narratives. I was listening to another issue. This had to do with the January 6th event. And this Chris Van Hollen is a Democratic senator from Maryland. And this was back when Tucker Carlson was playing the videotape of the actual events, of, you know, which undermined the narrative of being a riot, the fact that it was an insurrection, they had forced their way in, you know, everyone being let in, their ease, there wasn't much going on really. And Chris Van Hollen says that the videotapes of the actual day helped promote, were promoting a false narrative. So, you know, don't believe your lying eyes, believe our narrative. You know, we have no videotape, you know, it's like, oh, okay, that's what it is. That's, so he just completely inverts the reality. And this person like that has no, you know, no conscience, you know, it just, these are the type of snakes that.
Well, none of them do. They can't have a conscience and promote, you know, propaganda and mind control and shut down debate. That really is the only way that there can be an honest democratic a response to some of these issues. You couldn't do that stuff, right? I mean, if you weren't evil, they are. They, I swear. Look, just go back to the beginning of the show and look at the trajectory that we, you know, all of those individuals in that cluster have to be malevolent. They have to be actors. You know, their presentation to history, what we've heard about them, are lies. And in back of that, there is the organization. That is evil and is working against, you know, what can be called European culture. So this is what our problem was at the Civil War, and this is what our problem is today, right now. Same problem.
Yeah. And it was I was listening to it was Tim Pool. He was talking about the indictment of Donald Trump, and he was talking about regarding January 6th. And it's just the narrative of it. And he was saying, so you can spin a narrative of an event, and it may have not very little anything to do with what goes down or what happens. And he said he developed a counter narrative to Star Wars. And he says, and his narrative is a religious extremist, an older religious extremist, recruits a farm boy to become a terrorist. He leads a rebellion that blows up a military installation, you know, the Death Star. He says, that's the counter narrative. He says, what do you, it's the Death Star. He says, no. What if they call it like the Life Star? And it's a military operation, right? Yeah. You know, it's all just labels you use in these things. So you can twist anything around, you know, and sell your narrative. You know, so was it a protest of middle America over what they perceived to be a corrupt, a problematic election? It wasn't an insurrection assault on our democracy. See, two different words describe the same event, but what is actually more descriptive of the day's events?
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. Exactly. You know, it's one, you know, it's one of these things where you know, there's a he was running a tape where that guy, some comedian, was on Joe Rogan, and he was just spewing the typical CNN line. And he's talking about how Donald Trump didn't call for backup on Capitol Hill. Joe Rogan corrected and say, well, he did actually, it was turned down. Yeah. You know, it's just, now the way you approach that question was, you don't say, oh, he didn't call backup, you know, to help defend, secure the Capitol. It's just, the question should be it was Jim Gaffigan, the comedian, who was just mouthing all that. So he was on Joe Rogan's show. And the question should have been, so, well, okay, but what if he did and they turned it down? What does that tell us about the day's events?
Right, of course. I mean,
that's what happened.
You can
so
see that.
What does that tell you?
Diminishing returns. You cannot discuss these things.
Yeah.
Trump's judge, the black woman, that I'm not sure if all of the indictments are coming to her because there's so many now.
But that Tanya Chutkin or something.
Yeah. She had a real dazzler of logic. She said that. The freedom of speech must be restrained. No, she said it. Freedom of speech.
Well, I think what the Justice Department is claiming when Trump said remain peaceful, that was actually a lie because they were not peaceful. So it was a way to get them to stay there and carry out the insurrection, which is like, now they're reading Trump's mind. And then they're claiming that they know Trump did not believe that the election was stolen, that Trump did not believe he won. Well, how do you prove that in court? How do you prove that in criminal court? And what you're saying is now a political opinion has now tantamount to obstructing a government process and defraud. So when you have a political opinion that one side disagrees with you, you're defrauding the U.S. government.
Right.
That's really that's Clark's that's Clark's indictment.
Yeah.
So well, defrauding. It's depriving people of their vote if you think the vote was fraudulent.
I would like to see of this process have the judicial process come to a conclusion at the same time that the electoral process.
Well, won't the trial present an opportunity to actually bring out the evidence that the courts refused to look at in 2020?
Of course.
Because Trump could prevent evidence. Not, if they claim he's lying, then that gives him an opportunity to present evidence of voter fraud, at least a legitimate case that would lead some to believe that the fact that you had mail-in voting and ballot dumps and
look, the whole the whole malevolent, odorous election procedure could be exposed if they get into they have Trump, they'll be able to do discovery. Who knows what in the heck they're going to find
yeah.
And all this. So all I know is it is going to be a massive clown world event, which will further debase the American political.
Well, apparently this judge, Tanya Chutkan, she worked for Hunter Biden, the same law firm Hunter Biden worked for.
Yeah.
Which is like, what, conflict of interest?
Of course. And the whole thing is ridiculous. It's just, this is, the Trump trials. In fact, I think, ideally you would have the Biden trial, the Hunter Biden trial going on at the same time that the Trump trial is, and you have cross pornographic witnesses and somehow the trials will be merged into one concept.
Well, hasn't someone filed articles of impeachment tonight or something? I read that somewhere.
Yeah. They filed articles against Sleepy Joe. So that'll also be, so you can see we really have a lot. America has a lot of very important things that it's going to be dealing with, rather than the skyrocketing debt and the collapse of our military, things like this. Those things are not important, but the Hunter Biden trial, Trump trial, and now the impeachment of Joe. I mean, it's just, this will be, the season of the clown is upon us, my friend. It's just going to be ridiculous going forward here.
Well, they set us up for it when they installed Biden in 2020.
Of course.
With his 81 million votes.
Yeah, and I mean, if you really want, Biden.
No, apparently he almost walked off the edge of the Grand Canyon.
Oh, I saw the video of that. That was actually kind of frightening.
So it could have spared all. Could have spared us all.
Right. He's absolutely shot. And of course, he's going to run for another term. So the country, they're just dissembling America. They're absolutely trashing this nation economically, politically, in every which way. It's just,
well, that's what these like the source of attorney district attorneys are doing. Yeah,
of course. Exactly right. That is, you see, the process is just super, super clear in these areas. When
you saw that video in Stockton, California, I think you sent it to me, the convenience store guys, where the guy comes in. Apparently he had robbed the store before and they had enough. And he's literally throwing stuff into a large garbage receptacle.
Yeah.
And the, some guy's saying
they couldn't stop him. They were saying,
you can't stop him.
Yeah.
But now the Stockton police are investigating the store owners.
Right. So it is inversion, right? This is a thief who came in with a knife, right?
The knife, yeah.
Just stealing things, had the knife on him, threatened him with the knife. And one courageous guy grappled with him, pinned him, and his partner came up with a stick and started thrashing him.
Then he asked for a Coke on the way out or something.
Right. I mean,
it's so, like, even the guy, there was another black guy there. What are you dumb fool, ask for that? Get out of here. Yeah. The guy was videotaping. It was sounded like a black guy. But but it was like, don't do anything, just let it happen. You got insurance. Like, right. That's Well, you won't have insurance for long. I mean, you won't have a business.
California, the enclaves had better be pretty strong, because the rot is is flowing. And of course, I'm someone who lives in one of these enclaves, so I'm watching all this very interest, you know, with a lot of interest. You know, oddly, you know, the like the destruction of the cities of San Francisco and Los Angeles has been really good for the enclaves because, you know, strong, you know, well-financed people have left these places and have moved out into these enclaves. A lot of them have left the state too, but those that have come into the, you know, kind of sane enclaves have bid up the property values, but also they brought a kind of a little more coherent political vision of the world, right? Mm-hmm. Because it just come from the Soros liaison. So, you know, we'll see. Like San Francisco, I'm sure you've seen the videos of the absolute desertion of the downtown area. I mean, all of these fancy buildings now with no one in them. So it's clearly not tenable. Something will break here pretty quick. The only hope California has is Latinos, that if they fall hard on the side of conservatism and, you know, like property, mm-hmm. then the state might actually have a sea change. We'll see.
Gavin Newsom is running for president. So
I know, that's right.
So it's
and I think he'll, what do you think? I would suspect him.
Not officially, but I think he's definitely.
I think he's going to run.
Isn't he going to debate DeSantis about something? I don't know.
Yeah, well, he's offered him debate about the immigration or something about immigration. But
so I guess it's DeSantis figures if Trump is taken out with indictments that he'll be the man standing.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So he may as well hang in there.
So they're going to debate like whose state is better, Florida or California? Is that the
good luck with that one? Yeah. Yeah, Florida has really rebounded really well from the COVID madness, and now economically it's doing well. And, you know, it is a testament to the better, you know, kind of, and more freedom policies.
An example of what we were talking about was the same people controlling both sides. Because,
yeah,
DeSantis, you know, he's pretty much controlled. I mean.
Of course it is. Well, I mean, but he, you know, it's for the optics. It's sort of like I think the same way about Trump. Obviously, he's a lifetime actor, but the optics, in my mind, when you compare him to Biden, for God's sake.
Oh, yeah. I mean, obviously, having DeSantis in the White House would be less humiliating. Yeah.
There's no choice. There's simply no choice. I mean, when they are promoting the kind of aggressive transgender influence on children that they have turned to, I mean, you know, come on, Tim, we're really at Satan's door here. We just have to say no to this. And, you know,
if you don't support children being able to look at books with graphic descriptions of sexual perverse acts, you're banning books.
Right.
You know, barely if you're not giving, you don't give elementary kids students access to pornographic sexual material, you're banning books. You're against freedom. That's because you want to ban those books.
Well, they can just invert anything, you know, of course. And so that's just.
But these are the same people who get book ticked off Amazon, so you can't buy them. So.
Well, they banned Dr. Seuss because he's, you know, he's a racist white male. So, you know, they don't. This is critical theory all over again. Anyone who's followed the.
Yeah, you can't read Huck Finn, makes you read about oral sex in the sixth grade.
Yeah. Anyone who's followed the march through the institutions that the Frankfurt School implemented knows that. They criticize everything. They have no compulsion about lying, right? And if someone calls them on a fact, then they just say the fact is irrelevant and just go mm-hmm. back to lying. So this is what you're dealing with. It's a waste of time to interact with them. You just have to find people who are like-minded and try to create political power within that group. And just be aware that these individuals are there, these lifetime actors and very, very malevolent, you know, culture-destroying you know, Masonic elements, and you just have to be prepared to fight if you want to have a world that's sane and a place your children can grow up in.
Well, what they did was to gain access, to get influence and ultimate control of these institutions, they talked in language of freedom, free speech, free expression. The Jews did this, you know, pornography in the name of freedom, you know, all the stuff, free debate, free speech and all this stuff. But the feminism. Moment that but when they, and this was all good when they were contending with the right to get control of these institutions, because you could use that to get control, network, and of course the right being clueless and being stupid, didn't understand how they were, you know, how nepotistic they were, you know, and how they networked and how tribal they were. And given the right didn't see themselves as being part of a particular ethnic group, there was an ideology where this group sees itself as a particular ethnic group, tight knit, well organized, with specific interests, juxtaposed to the rest of the host, you know, to the host society. So when they became ascendant and dominating after the 1980s, that's when they start imposing direct censorship.
Yeah, suddenly freedom was out. Yeah. So you can see that everything was a weapon. You know, so the language had been weaponized, obviously, and inverted. You know, and so what are you going to do with them? You have to try to make sure that you have political power inside your world. And
look at the language. Look, like this creep out in California, where if you want to know that your kid is being groomed, your kid is going through some sort of confused state because of the toxic culture that's been created all around them, as a parent, and let's say you're a teacher and you're somewhat conscientious about this, and you want to tell the parent of what's going happen to your kid, you're violating that kid's civil rights, and you're just like a Klansman,
right? And see,
you're a Nazi if you do that, because you're violating civil rights.
And we have discussed this many times, yeah, that you cannot.
You're no better than the people that killed Emmett Till.
Right. You cannot engage that person meaningfully if you do not put evil into the discussion.
He certainly shouldn't be entrusted in the position of attorney general.
You have to be able to say, you know, what you're doing is evil. This is not, we are not dealing here with, you know, the technical language semantics that you're trying to, you know, input into the conversation. We have to point out that you are an evil person and that you are deliberately doing this, not because you believe that this is for the kid's benefit. It's because you want to destroy the child. You want to debase the child. You want to turn the child into something that is not threatening to you and your tribe. That's what you're doing here. That's what you see. This is the reality of it. And if you cannot bring in the reality, then you're going to end up being, you know, sliced to pieces by the semantics. You have to just take it straight on and say, this is evil. You're destroying this child for your benefit and for our group's detriment. And that's exactly what this is. Then you have the clarity, right, in conversation to, you know, to force him to start to discuss how it is that what he's doing is not evil. And you can also then segue into the overarching issue of tribal warfare, which is also, you know, something that has to be discussed in these issues.
Well, it's clear that, you know, institutions like the schools and the judicial system have been weaponized. And a good example is what I talked about with the NEA and AF and American Federation Teachers are endorsing with their open grooming and promoting this in schools. And now you have a situation where the grooming and the official sanctioning or approval of promoting sexual degeneracy and confusion in students is policy. And that's being forced down everyone's throat, because everyone's forced to pay for this through their property taxes and the force of laws behind it. But then attempt to deal with this like so-called conversion therapy, which is, you know, really reparative therapy. That's another term for it. They use conversion, even though you're not converting anything. You're just repairing something. That gets banned. I think it's banned in California. We talked a couple weeks ago about Michigan banning it, where the governor there, Whitmore, says, Michigan is now a state where people can be who they are, but, you know, basically you be who you are by pretending to be something you're not. That makes a lot of sense.
And they have some ability to create that instant and eternal, both of them, definition of are. They say, look, the kid said that he wanted to be a girl. We have it documented back here in this statement, and that's it. Forget it. Everything else is irrelevant. We have the reality. So there it is, you know, and what the parent has to do is open up the word R for discussion and try to say, okay, well, what about the science showing that sudden onset of these kinds of sexual transformation is influenced by social pressure. How do we know? What science do you have to prove that it isn't social pressure rather than this unique R that exists inside the mind of the child, which is in contradiction to his chromosomes? Where is your science to prove that? They don't have it.
They don't have it.
Zero.
But they've hijacked these institutions, taken them over, and you know.
Of course. And then they have the intimidation, and they just roll
under the guise of science or civil rights or tolerance or inclusion or just being nice. They're simply ruining these children.
They're doing it not because they're misguided. They're not misguided. They know exactly what they're doing.
Well, they're evil. Yeah.
They're evil. Yeah.
You know, let's see for what it is. And so, all that for evil to prevail is good men do nothing.
Yes, sir.
So, okay, Joe.
All right, Tim. Well, we'll get them next week. Thank you, sir.
Good night then. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.